This is Laura Dierdo with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Leslie Wan, Senior Medical Director of Medical Specialties, as well as Chief Kidney Health Officer and Senior Medical Director of all kidney services and nephrology practices for Intermountain Health. Dr. Wan, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. I'm very privileged and honored to be here.
Now, I'm really looking forward to our discussion. I know we have a lot to talk about, and there's so many exciting things happening in healthcare right now, particularly at Intermountain, which has always been on the forefront of innovation within the healthcare delivery space. But before we dive into that discussion, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've got the fortune of having two distinct and very fulfilling roles here at Intermountain. So I lead our medical specialists. So that's basically all of the medical specialties like endocrinology, rheumatology, infectious disease, everything except the interventional like GI cardiology ones. And with the original reason I was recruited to Intermountain was to lead efforts at improving kidney health throughout our system. So I oversee the care of patients with all levels of kidney disease, including on dialysis, but all of our nephrology practices across our networks.
Well, that's amazing to hear, and I can imagine a really big job to cover such a broad area that I know Intermountain covers, and such an important area too when you think about kidney care. Now, what are some of the biggest issues that you're following in healthcare right now?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit biased because I'm a nephrologist, I'm a kidney specialist by trade. But what I will say from a lot of daily interaction and just thinking in terms of a big picture improvement of healthcare, I think prevention, early identification, and sustainable strategies to address chronic conditions, which are inclusive of kidney disease, but I think really encompass the big drivers of mortality, morbidity, and pain and suffering, right? Diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, things like that. And I think it goes part and parcel with the whole idea and focus right now on improving value in healthcare delivery. How do we actually invest, justify, and strategize around using our scarce healthcare resources, right, to reach people where they're at and at a point in their lives where we can actually prevent these costly events from happening, right? And prevent people from actually having disease and keep them healthy. I think that is the biggest issue that not just here at Intermountain, but across healthcare.
That's such an interesting point, and certainly a huge challenge for communities across the country. And in the work that you're doing, obviously there's a lot that the medical community can do, but a certain percentage of it as well is trying to change the behaviors in wellness activities of the community at large. When you look at those two spaces, are you really tackling this problem of trying to change behaviors and really get the community more in a place where you're able to prevent some of the big challenges that can make a big difference for people's health?
No, absolutely. I mean, so looking at disease identification and prevention from a global kind of societal public health view, I mean, there's certainly a great need and a great challenge for us as the United States. To identify those actionable items in terms of behavior, which unfortunately a lot of those things are we term them social determinants of health, right? Are sometimes beyond what we as clinicians can immediately affect a change. But I think just acknowledging the importance of those things is critical. And I do think that there are these people have termed it kind of not the social determinants of health, but kind of the policy determinants of health. I think those actually drive our ability or inability to address those. I would say, while we do want people, right, not patients, but people to be more aware, engaged, and active in keeping themselves healthy. And we know that a lot of that starts not in adulthood or in late, in middle age or older age when people are actually sick. But that starts like when they're adolescents, that starts when they're, children. It actually starts, in the prenatal period, right? We can't actually fix all that right now, but I think one of the things we can address is how do we change behavior of physicians, of nurses, of healthcare leaders and administrators so that we're all kind of rowing in the same direction. And I think, Laura, I started out in private practice and I had this very naive conception of healthcare, coming from a busy academic medical center saying, hey, listen, if I'm in practice on my own and I'm not beholden to the rules of the medical center or hospital, I'll be able to deliver the kind of care, the kind of healthcare that I think is appropriate. And boy, was that a rude awakening when I, the first month in private practice when I realized that, the world doesn't actually work that way. So I think, in my journey through healthcare, through practice, working in industry on a couple of occasions, and then, very, very, I think, forward-thinking health systems like Cleveland Clinic and Intermountain, it's really given me that perspective that at the end of the day, in order for us to do better for our patients, to create that awareness and that policy change, physicians have to be front and center in changing their own behavior and recognizing what they need to do in order to make that happen.
That's great to hear. And, such a helpful and important perspective to have from the healthcare professional community. Now, when you look ahead, what are you most excited about? What makes you nervous?
Well, I'm excited about I think the growing, not only awareness, but the growing involvement that we as physicians and we as healthcare providers have in the whole value equation. And I know that's now kind of a hackneyed term, right? Value-based care. But essentially, if we're not able to leverage a different model of payment, a different reward system, right, in healthcare, we won't be able to sustain or motivate people to change. So I'm excited by the fact that, for example, at Intermountain Health, we are, 50% plus in value-based payment arrangements, which, it doesn't fix all of those social determinants of health issues. It doesn't fix all of the behavior change issues, for our providers or for the people we care for, but it gives us the opportunity to do so. So that's what makes me really excited. But what makes me not excited is the fact that the pace of change and the amount of change, even for someone like me who's, I really try to dedicate my career at changing healthcare delivery, it's dizzying. So when, for example, the federal government has, I think it's like 50 plus different ACO or alternative payment models, as they used to be called, the frontline clinician who we really need to buy in and invest their time, effort, and their blood, sweat, and tears into, it's almost too overwhelming. And then you've got a lot of noise, of course, because you've got big players outside of the traditional healthcare systems, the Amazons of the world, the CVSs and Walgreens, yes, but now no, that are really foraying into healthcare saying, hey, can we apply a lot of these things that have been really successful in non-healthcare sectors and make healthcare more efficient and effective? I think there's been, I think the jury's out because we've seen some great success, but we've also seen some challenges. And I think where I, as a physician, become concerned is that, with all the hype and hyperbole around, transforming healthcare and disrupting healthcare, who's really in it for the long term, right? Who's got the will or the finances to go through the ebbs to get to the peak? Does that make sense, Laura?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's a really fascinating way to approach just the healthcare landscape today, because as you mentioned, it seems that there is huge opportunity from the traditional healthcare space to figure out how to do it better and deliver better. But at the same time, there's so many complexities that, coming from outside of the industry and trying to be successful within healthcare, given the regulations, given the just how important it is to communities and how necessary it is. is, and everything else that goes along with the broader healthcare ecosystem, it's not easy to do and just come into the industry, you know, brand new and think you're going to make a big difference. So as you mentioned, we've seen that time and time again from different entrants into the space, and some have stuck around and some have changed and some have, you know, left to some degree. And so when you look at the kind of broader space here, who do you think is most best positioned, maybe not company by company, although, you know, would love to hear your thoughts on that if you have thoughts, but really in terms of, you know, who within the healthcare or non-healthcare space can really make the difference that's needed in order to deliver better care, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the thing that's going to be really critical, and part of this actually is shaped by some recent conversations I've had with physician leaders and other folks kind of internationally, thinking about how they are approaching, you know, healthcare and, you know, and disease prevention from a societal standpoint. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I think payers, I think health systems, you know, individual clinicians, we all have a different stake in things, but I think one of the things that I think will best align and ensure commitment, right? Lasting commitment is like what is the population, right? What is the constituency of interest? Because, you know, I now that I've worked, trying to negotiate contracts with payers, right? But now as part of Intermountain, you know, we have our own payer working inside that structure to kind of see things from their perspective. And I realize that it's so much more complex than what you see on the Daily Show, right? But what I do think is that, is there a way that we can activate policymakers and officials who have a commitment to their community, you know, beyond and involve the communities in terms of how they want to approach these things? Because I think at the end of the day, you know, as bullish as I've been in the past in terms of participating in, you know, in these new payment models and whatnot, you know, these are kind of things that are dictated by the length of a contract, right? Maybe 5 years or so. We really need to start thinking about how do we integrate a sequence of these types of contractual arrangements, connect the dots so we have a more longitudinal, holistic view of how we want to approach health. And I think the big thing is, you know, obviously until we stop, you know, until we stop the bleeding for these things like high cost hospitalizations, readmissions, you know, preventable events like, for example, in the kidney space, people, you know, showing up and the first time they see a kidney specialist is when they start dialysis in the intensive care unit. Those are things that we need to eliminate those things because they are the lowest hanging fruit, although they're not easy to address. But I think we need to work part and parcel with, across a broad array of stakeholders. So again, whether those are the leaders of our health systems, people in industry, people who are in public policy, but also our you know, the people in the communities. I think ultimately healthcare, you know, we keep hearing is a consumer driven industry. I've yet to actually see that consumers exercise their full power in terms of influencing how we invest in keeping them healthy.
That's such a great point, and definitely, you know, fascinating to see how everything, you know, will play out over the next few years. And speaking of these changing market dynamics and certainly, you know, where healthcare is headed, what do you think most effective healthcare leaders will need in order to be successful over the 2 to 3 years in the future, especially, as I mentioned, thinking through these changes and what really will make the biggest difference?
Yeah, that's actually such a foundational question, and that ties this all together. You know, Laura, earlier in my career, I was the VP of quality for a company in industry in the kidney health industry, and I really, really learned so much about Deming's teachings, quality, you know, focus on the process, not the people. But now, as I, you know, 20 years later, as I look back at what I've experienced and now looking at the landscape, I think process is obviously really important. We need to double down, triple down on the people, The pandemic, as you know, and I won't recapitulate what we know, is, it was really so, so harmful to our caregivers, physicians, nurses, other folks that are, taking care of people, in the pandemic and whatnot. And so now we're in this, kind of, I guess we're post-pandemic now, but the economics and finances are back front and center, and they're making health systems, including Intermountain, have to make some really tough, choices. I think keeping our people whole, and ensuring, not just having an initiative for employee wellness, but truly looking at the near and long-term needs of the people that have dedicated their lives to healthcare, that's what an effective leader needs to do. Because without the people, it's not going to happen.
Absolutely. I love that. Dr. Wong, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been a fascinating discussion, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. Again, thank you so much to Becker's for inviting me to share my thoughts.